Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about women and mental health tonight. May is Mental Health Month. And my guests are Dr. Jonathan Good, licensed psychologist with the Howard University Counseling Service, and Lisa Brown Alexander, author of the book Strong on the Outside, Dying on the Inside. Lines are open. We are taking your calls to give you a hand. If you need some help or some advice tonight, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Adrian, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. Yeah, thank you so much for calling back. You were talking about ADHD. Tell me briefly, what's the issue?
The issue is that I just recently got diagnosed as an adult, and I just find it hard with, you know, being as a Black woman to, you know, have a diagnosis like that that people expect kids to have and, you know, things like that. So it's kind of odd to get over a hump like that and then to not necessarily find the resources for adults that have it. It's often difficult because I see a lot of things like, oh, you should do this for kids or parenting things. And it's like, I'm not a parent. Some of this doesn't relate to myself per se. And then on top of it, it's like, I'm a Black woman that has something and, you know, dealing with issues with trying to, you know, be a family, be more supportive and things. And people just think, oh, you just need to pay attention more. Or, oh, you just need to do whatever. And it's like, no, this isn't something you just can pray away. It's something you really have to find a professional and seek help with. And it's just troubling.
Dr. Good.
Sometimes.
That's a great point, because people oftentimes look at the diagnosis of ADHD and associate it with children and adolescents, but they rarely seldom look at how it affects adults. And when we're talking about ADHD, it's very important that you do go in to see a professional who can give you a definitive diagnosis of the disorder and to assess exactly what type of ADHD, what diagnosis did you get when it came down to the ADHD? Was it hyperactive or inattentive type?
After a couple of car accidents, and it's like, oh, maybe I do have something going on.
Was it predominantly a hyperactive or inattentive type of diagnosis?
Inattentive,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it can be very confusing, because when you have an inattentive type diagnosis of ADHD, sometimes it gets misdiagnosed for like depression or anxiety or other things. And people often don't realize that adults too suffer from ADHD. And if you diagnose it properly, you can basically find ways to treat it. It's different treating depression versus treating ADHD. You have therapy, and then you can have medication, which can help you with your ADHD. And since we're talking about depression, those two disorders go hand in hand, because when you're dealing with ADHD symptoms from that for so long and it's undiagnosed or not addressed and treated properly, or people don't understand what your struggle is, that can bring a tremendous burden of isolation, confusion, irritability, you know it, sleeping, restlessness, mm-hmm. the whole nine yards.
Okay. Well, Adrian, thank you. Thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tasha calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Tasha. What's on your mind?
I was calling because I wanted to know, I am too a Black woman, and I wanted to know, where exactly do you start? I mean, I've talked to several doctors. Was just satisfied with the approach that they had with addressing depression. So I just want to know where to start. And I've had sleepless nights, long days, mood swings of not wanting to do things. I just want to get over it. And I just want to know where to start at. Like, you know, even if it's self-help.
Okay.
You know, where exactly do you start?
Dr. Good.
What were some of the concerns or issues you had with connecting with the therapist?
They just wanted to put me on medication.
Yeah.
It's like they weren't addressing what it is that I was trying to explain to them, how I was feeling, you know, what was bringing the onset of depression, the mood swings. It's like, oh, well, you know, you have PTSD and we're going to put you on this medication or we're going to put you on that medication. And I didn't want to take all that medication if it's something that I can talk about to be resolved.
Right. You know, and sometimes people get into the business of prescribing medications without talk therapy. And there's a difference between seeing a psychiatrist versus a psychologist.
Right.
Psychiatrist, I'm wondering if you saw a psychiatrist, which typically they prescribe medication, and there is talk therapy involved, but it's predominantly it's medication treatment.
Yeah, it's minimum talk therapy. It's pretty much, okay, well, when did this start? How did this start? Okay, well, we're going to give you this and see how this works for 3 months, and then you come back.
In your venture and looking for a provider, I would definitely start with looking for a counselor, like a social worker, a licensed professional counselor, a psychologist. They provide psychological services that would be more into talk therapy, so you can get into the depthness of the depression or the mood, the component that you're dealing with. Because sometimes you cannot treat depression with medication alone. You need talk therapy to be able to work through some things, to think through some of the automatic irrational thoughts that we sometimes tell ourselves, the underlying issues that all bring about the feelings of depression. So the provider that you seek is perhaps the best place to start, not a psychiatrist. First, or not necessarily excluding a psychiatrist, looking at a psychologist as well as a psychiatrist.
So you're suggesting start slow.
Start slow and making sure you seek the right provider.
Okay. Well, Tasha.
Okay, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Tasha, for your phone call. Gail calling from Ashburn, Virginia. What's on your mind?
I'm calling because my daughter, I realize she's going through the same thing that the person that explained who wrote the book, I believe your name is Lisa, and I'm just trying to find a way to encourage my daughter to start going through counseling because her seemed to have started once she had my granddaughter. And then from there, I thought we had handled it, but I'm realizing more and more from the different things she's doing that she is actually going through a depressed state. I mean, she's doing great as far as job-wise. It seems like to everyone else, she seems to be fine, and everybody, you know, gives her a lot of praise about how good she's doing, how great her life is, how great she is as a mother. But in the same token, I see things different, how she deals with her daughter. She gets to the point where she's disconnected sometimes, and it's like she goes through different phases. But right now, she's going through a knitting stage, and she uses knitting, she says, as a therapeutic way. But to me, it's like she's shutting everything out.
Okay.
You know, one of the things that you can do is offer to go with your daughter to see a psychologist, right? To start there, to offer to go with her, to sit with her, to help her find someone and assure her that you're in it with her to help her get back to who she really needs to be. You know, much like you can be a functional alcoholic and the doctor can refute this or not, you can be functionally depressed as well. And that means you can operate well, you know, in the normal realm of work and other responsibilities. But then when you're outside of those environments, you know, things are not quite as effective.
Okay.
I did go to counseling with her in the beginning and she just stopped. And I think that was her way of acting like everything was fine and masking it. And I thought it was. But it was until, honestly, a friend was like, your daughter drinks a lot. Like, she would come to my house, and I just have liquor sitting there, but I finally poured it out. He was telling me she was drinking. And then she told me she started smoking.
Don't give up.
Smoking what? Cigarettes?
Cigarettes. Okay. She won't go any further because of her job and her security clearance.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that bothered me was the amount she was drinking.
Okay.
Like, I'm not going to lie, because I'm not a drinker. I don't pay attention to the bottles. But because the guy was dating, he was a drinker.
Mm-hmm. And he noticed.
Paying attention to the level of the bottles.
Okay.
And he was like, they're going down really quick because he thought I was drinking.
Well, let me see what Dr. Good has to say. What's the next step for someone who has abruptly stopped therapy and is showing signs that perhaps they need to go back? How do you get that person back to that?
It's a very complicated issue to try to get someone back into therapy when they feel like they have it all together, everything's fine. To take an approach that will point out some of the difficulties that they're having in life, well, I notice that your drinking is increasing. I notice that you're smoking more. I notice that you're isolating yourself from others. Do you feel like some of these concerns may be of an issue that you might need to talk to someone else? It seems like these things are getting worse. So identifying like how the situations their symptoms have gotten worse, and to use that as a pre-marker to let them know that perhaps you know, going back to therapy wouldn't be a bad idea. It's not bad that she's knitting, but like you said, she's isolating herself from other people, okay. And she's drinking more as well.
Well, okay. Good luck to you and your daughter, Gail, and thank you so much for calling. Before I go back to the phone lines, something just occurred to me. Dr. Good, is depression different for women when compared to men? You know, we often talk about heart disease and how women present symptoms different from men. Is it the same kind of situation for depression?
That's a good question. Well, it's according to research, depression itself, the prevalence rate is 1.3 to 3 times higher for women than men. The symptoms of depression look the same. You know, you still have the persistent sadness, mood, irritability, feelings of guilt, worthlessness, helplessness. But there's a difference between what we call internalizing and externalizing symptoms. Depression may look differently for, let's say, a woman. And we don't want to grossly stereotype or generalize, but women typically suffer with depression and it manifests in internalizing symptoms where it's internalized feelings of badness, sad, anxiety, depression. And people sometimes would look at those symptoms as manifesting more internally. Externalizing symptoms for men would look like acting out behaviors. Mm. So irritable, angry, hostile, fighting, anger management issues. The symptoms they manifest differently.
Okay. Interesting point. And you know, for you, Lisa, we had a caller who said you can't just pray your depression away, but there's a strong faith component to your recovery. But when she said that, you kind of nodded your head. So how do you balance the clinical work with the spiritual component?
That's a real issue, particularly for so many Black women who, you know, practice their Christianity or their faith in whatever realm that they do. Balancing the desire or the need to get professional help with your faith, right? Those two things are not mutually exclusive, nor are they competing. You could both be a Christian and a practicing believer and seek help. It's not either or. It's not an either or proposition.
So how did things begin to work for you when you began taking the time with the therapist? What were the critical moments that helped with your recovery?
Having someone who would listen objectively without putting any baggage on the conversation. That was a real catalyst for me, being able to just hear me speak, hear me explain and explore my feelings, help me question how I got here. She was incredibly effective. She had the voice of Maya Angelou. I will say this every time I speak about her. She had a calming, soothing effect, and she was an effective listener. Having someone in your circle who listens goes such a long way. Part of talk therapy is being heard, right? And having the opportunity to express those things that you're holding within. And when you do not have a vehicle to express, my experiences and those that I've spoken to is that their depression and their depressive symptoms become worse. Mm-hmm. So talking is key. And I address that in the book, You Gotta Talk. I've got an entire chapter committed to the issue of talking through your pain.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. 10. We're talking about women and mental health. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Ruby in Bowie. And if you have a question or a comment, you can still give us a call. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue the conversation about women and mental health. Let me go back to the phone lines at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ruby, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, my name is Ruby from Bowie, Maryland. Mm-hmm. I overheard someone talking earlier about finding treatment. I wanted to give you a resource, a website, where they can go to www.samhsa.hhs.gov.
Say that again, please.
www.samhsa, S as in Sam, A as in Apple, M as in Mary, H as in Hat, S as in Sam, A as in Apple, dot HHS, that's HHS, Sam, HHS, dot gov. If you go on that website and you look up treatment locator, you could find a locator anywhere within the United States, pretty much in every state. You could put in there what you're looking for, women treatment only. You could put in there your payment source, whether it's Medicaid or if it's military, TRICARE, or if it's a private insurance company. You can put that in on the website. You can put your zip code in, your state, and you will find various providers in that area. For people who have co-occurring disorders, that is mental health and substance abuse, you can put in there you just want outpatient co-occurring, which is substance abuse and mental health, or if you just need substance abuse, you can just put in substance abuse, check off that. You could put it outpatient, residential, detox, whatever you might need, you can find it on that website. The other thing I just wanted to mention is that for people who are reluctant to go into care, it would behoove the family or significant others to even go on this website to see if they can find a provider and then work with that provider to develop an intervention plan for that loved one. So they will already have it all set up. Because to tell someone you need to go into care, that's a good thing, but tell them that once you have developed an intervention plan and you have a treatment provider who is willing to work with you to set up that plan, so it's already set up, so you just get the person in there and let the expert do the talking. And I just think that's very, very important to have that kind of plan available.
Well, Ruby, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And I'll make sure that I post that on WHUR.com. For those of you that are not familiar with SAMHSA, it stands for the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. This is a federal governmental agency within the Department of Health and Human Services. So it is a division of the federal government. And I certainly, you know, salute you, Ruby, for bringing that, you know, to our attention as a resource. So thank you so much for bringing that to our attention. Again, it is SAMHSA.gov. That's SAMHSA.gov. And I'll make sure that I post that on WHUR.com after the program. So again, Ruby, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Lisa, talk to me about the process. How long were you in therapy, and was there a watershed moment, an aha moment where you began to see transition happening for you?
So I was in therapy for about 18 months. And I would say when I began to realize I was getting better, when I could see and feel the sun. And I mean that literally. No matter what the weather was, I felt cold and gray all the time. And when I could finally feel the sun, I could feel warmth again. I could feel kind of just peace and joy and creeping back ever so slowly. I knew that I was on the road to recovery. And the more I felt it, the more I wanted it, to the point where now if I even think I'm feeling a hint of depression, I'm fighting. I can't go back there. I just refuse to. And most depression survivors that I know feel that way when they've come through it and don't want to go back.
Well, that's interesting, because some people will say if you are beyond feeling blue, and those who may not be as sensitive to it, they may just say, get over it and handle it, and which is not the appropriate thing to do. And yet that's where it sounds like you are now.
Well, I am. Mm-hmm. I would not say to someone else, suck it up and get over it. That's what we tell each other, though, all the time. If I came to you and I said, you know, I'm feeling kind of blue and this has been going on for weeks, the first reaction that most Black women tell each other, girl, you're going to be all right. You're strong. You've got this. Mm-hmm. We say that to each other all the time, which perpetuates this hesitance to go out and seek help. But I would say that for those of us who have gotten past it, through it, better, much like an alcoholic, you can stay sober. You can stay happy and healthy and not go back to depression. The key is knowing what the symptoms are, knowing what your triggers are, and guarding against them.
What were your triggers?
For me, my triggers were not being able to talk and not being able to express myself. When I felt like I was locked in, it pulled me further down.
And what was preventing you from talking or expressing yourself? Was that something inside you, or were there outside factors that were preventing you from talking and expressing yourself?
It was really internal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I drank the Kool-Aid to say that I'm a strong Black woman, so I really shouldn't be going through this and I shouldn't have these issues. I'm a woman of faith and have been my entire life, and, you know, Jesus can work it out. There was a little bit of that conflict internally, and that prevented me from speaking out. My career was soaring, and so who would believe me if I really said I was suffering from depression when I was doing as well as I was? Mm-hmm. You know, I could always show up right and ready, and so, you know, the narrative doesn't fit what people were seeing, and that caused me to be silent.
What did you talk about? You made reference to that, and I want to ask Dr. Good about the importance of that, but you keep referencing talking things out. What were you saying?
I was talking about my feelings, how I was feeling, both when I was at my worst state and when I was feeling better. And I talked about some of the things with my therapist that I think contributed to my depression and made it worse.
Such as?
Family matters, past. You know, I'm the product of divorced parents. And, you know, I think most of us who have divorced parents carry some baggage. But when you don't address those things and you're suffering from depression, they become enormous. And they really did take on a life of their own.
Talk to me, Dr. Good, about talk therapy and how it can be beneficial. And as a therapist, what is it that you are looking for when you are talking to patients?
Right. Talk therapy is useful because it can be a corrective experience to look at how one's cognitions, their thoughts, their behaviors can sometimes be in our own way. It's very useful because depression looks like this. They're rational thoughts that we tell ourselves, they're automatic thoughts that we tell ourselves, and it becomes our truth. And when it becomes our truth, it becomes our reality to the point where we don't think anything differently. When you're talking to a therapist about this, they challenge you on your thoughts, your thinking, your patterns, and be able to reframe and reflect them in such a way to help you listen to yourself to demystify some of these negative notions that you may have carried on ever since childhood, that you've been telling yourself, that other people have been telling you negative thoughts. So it helps you work through some of these negative entrenched thoughts that you always condition yourself to believe, to rethink yourself and recondition your way of thinking and learning. That's what the benefit of talking through things. And that's called cognitive behavioral therapy. That's one way of treating depression, which is the most common way of treating depression.
With that said, and Lisa alluded to this, obviously there are techniques and therapies that professionals know. But is it possible, if you have a good friend who listens without judgment, without the baggage, who is willing to have that, you know, that perpetual listening ear, could that also be a way for you to provide yourself with some self-therapy if talking is kind of the foundation, as long as the depression is not clinical or hyper severe?
Talking to a friend or a loved one isn't a bad idea. You can talk to people to get another opinion if that's something that you want to do before you enter therapy. But if you want a professional opinion, someone who can take an objective stance, someone who can look at your issues and definitively diagnose what type of depression you might have, because Lisa mentioned she had postpartum depression.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have mood disorders like bipolar disorder. Some people have major depressive disorder. There are whole persistent depressive disorder, which is a long, more enduring. I'll say all that to say that it's very important to seek a professional. While it is also helpful to speak to a friend, you really want the best treatment. You want someone who is trained in understanding depression or mood disorders in general, so that you can get the appropriate type of treatment to treat the type of depression that you might have.
Lisa, do you remember your last day of therapy?
I do.
What was that like?
It was a wonderful conversation where my therapist said, "You're good. You're ready to be free, and you don't need to come back next week because I think you're at a better place." And I realized that I was. And so it was affirming. It was freeing. It was great.
Well,
I know that sounds strange to say, but it really was.
Not at all. No, it doesn't at all. And I'm glad to see that you are free and mentally healthy and able to, you know, move forward.
Absolutely. And I want to say this, you know, we think of depression as something that other people suffer from, mm-hmm. particularly in the Black community. We think that's for crazy rich white folks. I'll be honest. And we perpetuate that so that if we are suffering from, we feel very hesitant to speak up because we don't want folk in our business. We don't want folk thinking we're crazy. And that becomes almost, you know, it locks us in to not seeking the very help that we need. And so I wrote the book because so many of us as Black women, we have it all together on the outside. We dress the part, we play the part, we drive our nice cars and live in our nice houses and wear our Prada shoes, but we are torn up inside and don't give ourselves permission to take off that baggage.
Well, Lisa Brown Alexander, the book is Strong on the Outside, Dying on the Inside. Thank you so much. I appreciate you coming in. And also, Dr. Jonathan Good, always good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, May 3rd. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow me on Twitter at Daily Drum, WHUR, or H. Fisher, WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 142.